Hi everybody, this is Carmel McPherson, President of Highlander Worldwide. Please join us for the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention, The Gathering, in Los Angeles, California, October 20th to the 22nd. You're listening to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 38 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, games, special events, and another Blood of Kings Highlander TV series episode fan pick. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts. I'm so glad to be back. Norm, oh, I missed you so much. How are you, bro?
I'm good. I missed you too. And help me, Obi-Kev Kenobi. You're my only hope.
I like that. Hashtag Obi-Kev Kenobi.
Obi-Kev Kenobi.
How's it going, man?
Or Obi-Wan Kevnobi. Is that too hard to say?
No, I like the first one. That was good.
Glad to have you back. So, glad to have you back. Yeah, well,
okay, so we recorded the get to know you episode, the evening at Joe's. Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest with you, I just come back from the Star Wars celebration, as I'd mentioned, you know, there. And yeah. I was just Jones and start talking to you about Highlanders. That's what we kind of threw that together, but that was a lot of fun.
It was fun. And I wrote something down that I shared with all the listeners when they read the notes of the show after it gets published. And I thought it was a good idea because we've had so many people come on to the Blood of Kings Facebook fan page and the forum recently. And I think that's fantastic. But not everyone has spent as much time as some of the longer time listeners that have been part of that forum. So I think it's great that they get a chance to at least know us a little bit and then, you know, ask us questions and kind of understand where we're coming from with our fandoms.
Yeah, and, you know, they listen to our voices and they want to know who these mopes are and, you know, who they, what makes them tick.
Those sexy things.
Well, before we head on into Joe's, I just want to tease the show. And as we alluded to in the opening here, this is our second Highlander TV series fan pick. And we are choosing Jill Burdick's pick of Shadows.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting episode.
Yeah, very interesting. And, you know, when she picked it, I was a little surprised. But we'll go into the reason why she did. And I like this pick because it's not your big kind of Hollywood Highlander type pick, you know, as we did with Mortal Sins. Mm-hmm. I thought this was very interesting, and I had a different perception and feeling about this episode before we kind of dove into it and watched it and wrote up notes for it, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But what was your impression when you first heard about the episode that Jill picked?
Well, I like picks like this because you're right, Kevin. These are kind of off the beaten path of the tentpole fan favorites like Band of Brothers or Mythos or Finale Part 1 and 2 or Samurai. Shadows is one of those mid-range, really high-quality episodes that you kind of forget about, but when you watch it again, you're like, wow, this has a really interesting story. And it kind of crosses into some of the supernatural qualities of Highlander that you like a lot, because you like a lot of the mysticism and a lot of that otherworldly and ethereal quality of what immortals can be, right? So, but in rewatching this, I haven't seen this in quite a while, and I think that I'm watching it with the distance of time and a little bit of forgiveness, and it's a completely different experience for me.
Yeah, I have a different take on it now than I did before,
and we'll definitely get into that. But before we go into Joe's, I want to tell people where they can find us here. The Blood of Kings, you can find our podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play for you Android users. On Instagram, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network and, of course, Blood of Kings Pod. We're getting a lot of pictures up there, and I don't know if you've noticed in social media, Norm, Instagram is kind of becoming a lot bigger and being utilized a lot more, because I think getting the visual social media presence out there is going to become more and more important. So
yeah, and I also what I like about Instagram is that you don't really kind of fall prey to the politics of what goes back and forth on Facebook,
like, or Twitter for that matter. Yeah,
because Instagram is like you're sharing something that's cool, and then people dig it, and they'll like it, and they'll share something that's cool. And you're right; it's very visually based, so you can share that particular vision with somebody, and they'll like it. And you know, puppies or you know, ducks swimming in ponds or swords or I don't know.
Well, we've been putting up a lot of pictures of our clip art and as well as some other things. So make sure if you are on Instagram, please check us out there. And of course, on Facebook, our Blood of Kings Highlander fandom group, which is growing each day. And if you are also a fan of the Highlander CCG or have questions about it, since we've recently touched on an episode of the collectible card game, specifically the second edition, please follow us there. Email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. And on Twitter, we are at Blood of Kings Pod. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norm, where can we find you on Instagram and Twitter?
You can find me there at Starfighter1701.
And our wonderful master of editing and frequent host, guest host here on Blood of Kings, Mike, you can find him at Immortal Chimoli. I still owe him money.
I thought you sent that already. Sometime.
No, I have not. I got something planned with that. It's not just going to be a regular $20. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Pennies.
My drift. So
you're going to send him rolls of pennies. Do it.
It's actually a better idea like that. I got something else planned though. <All right>. please leave us a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. We love 5-star reviews, but we'll take any feedback. Please leave a review. We would like to do that, and we'll mention you here on Blood of Kings too. So please do that. And I want to remind people, we are having a Blood of Kings social media contest, #Highlander101. If you have a Twitter account, please follow us on Twitter at Blood of Kings Pod and reshare and quote our tweets by using the #Highlander101 and, of course, at Blood of Kings Pod. We want to get, obviously, more of a social media presence on Twitter and Instagram, too. But on Twitter, please send us a tweet. And be creative, but remember to use #Highlander101 and, of course, tag us at Blood of Kings Pod. Feel free to do it on Facebook. Use those. Use that #Highlander101. We're referencing an earlier episode where we wanted to get new listeners in to the show and to learn about Highlander. And we're giving away a signed copy of author John Mosby's Fearful Symmetry, Essential Guide to All Things Highlander, the perfect book for new and old fans. So please get up there on Twitter. If you have that, please follow us, and we'll follow you back and start talking to us through Twitter. We'd love to hear that. So, and also you can follow John Mosby on Twitter at There Goes the Day. So I'm really excited about that, Norm, but you know what I'm more excited about? I'm kind of hungry.
So am I.
Where should we go?
Well, considering that we just left there and now we're going back there, like I said before, let's go to the place where everybody knows Joe's name.
All right, man, dude. Remember the last time we were here? We saw Mythos, we saw Duncan, and we saw Amanda. Did you ever get your wallet back, by the way?
I did, and I got exactly what was inside of it, and there was nothing. So she stole it for absolutely no reason.
Well, Joe's jamming over there. Looks like he's getting ready for a gig, so it's nice to see he's back here doing that. Good to be back. It's been a while since I've been here in Seacouver. Mm-hmm. But good to be back at our table, and we have that tab. Can you imagine what that tab looks like? It says, like, cheese, cheese fries, Diet Coke, some type of, you know, made up alcohol that Norm always orders, you know.
I have a new one for us today.
Uh-oh, what you got? What you got?
So the single malt that Joe turned me on to just recently when he introduced Mike and I to the private gaming room is a smaller but high-quality single malt called Kilchoman. Yes. So...
It sounds like a Klingon word, dude.
It does. It does. The H is silent. What kind of like more of that H, so it's Kilchoman.
I'm going to file that up in the made-up alcohol department again.
Served with a side of gach.
So, yeah, a couple episodes ago, you had visited the game room, which I did not know that Joe had. How that was pretty cool, man.
It was nice. It was nice. And hopefully, we will be able to get back to that game room soon, talk more about the second edition card game with you back in there with us and with Stevie Rice.
Ah, that was really cool. It was really good to see you guys, hear you guys talk about that. And I, sorry I missed out, but it was a good show, and hopefully we'll get back in there soon. Well, I thought we'd update people on the Sword Experience. Some new dates have been announced. By the time this episode comes out, we are filming on May 1st, 2017. The May 12th Cheyenne, Wyoming, I believe, will have been done already. But we got May 28th in New Zealand, Tarunga, New Zealand. June 3rd, Wellington, New Zealand. These are the Armageddon Expos. This was just announced. June 18th in Dallas, Flower Mound, Texas. Brand new. June 24th, we got Knoxville, Tennessee and Knoxville Convention Center. And of course, then there's the Euro Tour.
So
July 16th in, July 16th in Ireland at Trim Castle. July 19th in England, Warwick Castle. July 23rd, Scotland, the Hope Town House near Edinburgh. July 26th in France, the Chateau de Chantilly. And please contact Carmel McPherson for these Euro tours. And you can contact her at HighlanderTours1592@gmail.com. And then, of course, just officially announced on the Blood of Kings page today was John Mosby mentioned that they are officially announcing the Sword Experiences at the Highlander Worldwide Gathering Convention that you and I will be at Los Angeles, California on October 20th. I think it's going to be on that Friday. October 20th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably going to have two because that's the workshop day, if I remember right.
Yeah. Friday is going to be the workshop day as far as John and Carmel have told us. And if there are going to be any other classes, if Elizabeth is going to offer her Tai Chi flying fan class, a rainbow fan class, and if Ephraim McAsh or if Anthony DeLongis are going to hold any of their seminars, it would be on that day. But we haven't had any confirmation for any other seminars aside from the Sword Experience right now.
I got a question for you. If this is just a dream scenario, but if let's say Highlander Worldwide said, hey, Norm, I want you to run a class, what would you run?
I would run how to play the Highlander CCG collectible card game.
Really?
I would. I absolutely would. Let's put it this way. We have a master of bullwhip and sword fighting. We have a master of German longsword, rapier, saber, and other forms of small bladed weaponry, as you've experienced with Ephraim McAsh's knife course. We have a master of sword fighting and choreography at the Sword Experience, and a master of Tai Chi Rainbow Fan. I don't think I'm going to offer anything there that's going to be of significant quality. But I do know how to play the heck out of Highlander CCG.
This is true. I bet you're a lot better than I am, and that would be fun. The only thing I could really contribute is either to assist you or... I was recently given a very good compliment during the Star Wars celebration. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I've got excellent selfie skills when it comes to group shots.
You have mastery selfie skills.
I could teach it. Yeah. Oh, totally. I could totally teach a class on mastery selfie skills.
Yeah. Let's put that on the docket. Carmel and John, let's see, at 1:30 to 1:32, Kevin's class on mastering the selfie skills. And
all I need is 2 minutes, bro.
So fun.
So, okay, so that's the, that has been announced for the Sword Experience. And October 28th, a week later, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, at FIFOCon. And November 10th, Providence, Rhode Island, for the Rhode Island Comic Con. Dude, he is one busy dude, Mr. Adrian Paul.
Rhode Island. That's wicked awesome. As the East Coasters would say.
Yeah. Speaking of the Highlander 20th Anniversary Convention, that's at the Crown Plaza, Los Angeles, LA International Airport. Make sure you check that out. Please, if you're thinking of going, make your arrangements now. I have a feeling probably stuff will start selling out in the next few months, especially when it comes to rooms and other such. So please make your arrangements. Confirmed guest, Adrian Paul, Elizabeth Grayson, Jim Burns, F. Ron McAsh, David Abramowitz, and most recently, Anthony DeLongis. And I'm sure there's going to be some more.
Oh, I'm sure.
Some more.
Yeah.
Who's the actor that plays James Horton again? You met him?
Peter Hudson.
I would love to meet him.
Yeah.
I would be scared out of my mind, but I would love to meet him. I don't know if I've said this before, being sarcastic, but I think he is the best Highlander villain in that whole TV series. If you ask me.
I think that's a testimony to how good he is as an actor, because he was such a sweet guy when I met him.
Oh, man. Now, I was going to save this till a bit later, but Norm, I may have broken the internet the other day.
How so?
Well, I posted a meme on the Bloody Kings fan page.
Oh, yeah.
Since I had just come back from the Star Wars celebration, they premiered the Last Jedi trailer. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain scene in the trailer that shows Rey doing some lightsaber technique off kind of in the distance on a cliff's edge with Luke Skywalker standing behind him. Mm-hmm. And as a Highlander fan, you know what we thought, right?
That's right. That was the it's very reminiscent of a fantastic scene from the 1986 movie where Ramirez and Connor are training on a very similar mountaintop.
And of course, I had to put this meme out. I said, I showed the Last Jedi trailer. I said, Star Wars, The Last Jedi. And then the picture below, I showed the training sequence of Highlander. And I said, what Highlander fans see? Mm-hmm. Well, that got a huge response. And as of to date, 257 total shares.
Because it's true. When I saw that, I'm like, when I saw the preview for The Last Jedi, I'm like, that reminds me a lot of that scene that I saw in Highlander. Interesting.
But it's a testimony to how strong we all felt about that as being Highlander fans, because everyone that loves Highlander saw that and said the same thing. And it also jumped up some of our numbers for members wanting to come into Bloody Kings as well. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah. Well, you know why? Because we complete it. It's full circle, our fandom, right? From Star Wars to Highlander to everything in between.
Yeah. Well, you know, instead of the Norm's Immortal Challenge.
Oh, thank God.
I have to talk about one thing.
Okay.
And I was listening to
One thing?
No. Okay. All right. I love the job that you and Mike did on the Listener's Chronicles with the Bloody Kings fans.
Thank you.
Of course, I was not here to be able to record that with you because I was down in Orlando for the Star Wars celebration, but it was killing me listening to that episode going, I want to talk about that right now. I've got so much to say. So what I'm going to do in kind of a speed format, okay, in the best I can, I'm going to try and touch on some of those main things and give a brief thing about what I think about it.
Go.
Okay? Because it was killing me, bro. It really was. Okay, first of all, excluding the McClouds, which immortal do you think would win the game? I would agree. I think Amanda would, because she's Amanda. And, you know, she's just really good at manipulating men. So
I think
that she would do that.
All right.
Who would win in a fight, Mythos and Darius? I think Mythos would win. He's been around for far too long. And I think there's more to him than anyone else knows. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually Darius might come around and let him win it, you know. So regarding Vince Stefanelli's hair ties from the 90s that you guys were talking about, I'm growing my hair out now. I would like one. Don't have one. So just putting that out there.
I'll take care of you, buddy.
Excluding Connor, Kurgan, Ramirez, which character would you choose from the existing Highlander universe to show up in the upcoming reboot? I'm going to agree with Mike. I want Joe Dawson and the Watchers back, and I would love the Hunters to come back as too, or at least just a tease to the Watchers, whether it was Joe or something. That's what I'd love to see.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the one thing that was kind of like, ooh, why didn't you mention this, guys? You're killing me. Okay. Let's say Darius / Werner Stalker hadn't died. What kind of episodes do you think would have gotten a second season? Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. when he died as an actor, they did the Hunters episode to kind of wrap up his character, unfortunately.
Right.
Then we got Mythos' character later on, right?
Right.
If I remember correctly, and this would be a question I would ask David Abramowitz, if it wasn't for Warner Stalker's death, would we have Mythos? Was Mythos someone that came about because of the character of Darius dying?
I thought he said that.
I don't know if we ever would have gotten a Mythos character if Warner Stalker had passed away.
No, you know what? I don't think that Mythos was originally written. I think that he actually said that at one point in time. He always wanted Duncan to have a mentor figure. And Mythos became that, and also Sean Burns became that. So we wanted to handle that in another future episode, the mentors of the McClouds, you know, Ramirez, right. You know, Grahamash, Mythos, and Darius. And
well, I don't think we would have gotten a Mythos character if Warner Stalker had passed away. So that is huge in my mind. And it's just funny how things worked. But I think in my mind, I don't think we would have what we have out of Mythos if that hadn't happened. But I would have loved to have seen what had happened to Darius and just diving back into it. And I know there was a book that you guys touched on, and we will touch on that later. That is the Shadow of Obsession book that Mike had been talking about too. So now I'm kind of curious about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait a second. Curious enough to read it?
We'll see.
Because we've admitted a couple things in our last episode when we did An Evening of Joes that we can't read. It's just that it's not our favorite form of medium.
Yeah, I've got so much going on. I just don't have the patience to read, so I got to figure that out. I might pay someone, like maybe Vince or someone, to do an audiobook for us. Is there anyone out there actually that would read that book MP3 form and then send it to us? That'd be great.
I might do that for you. You know what I'll do? I'll call Jim Dale and ask him for some tips.
Oh, there you go, bro. Yes. I want to touch on James Moberly, talking about the comics. Yes, we will cover the American Dream. We'll kind of all sum it up. But he did a great thread commenting on the comics that have been out there by Dynamite. And I just want to say, I just purchased something on eBay, and I'm looking at some other stuff because I'm really curious about the comics. So thank you, James, on that. I want to talk about Jill's. She has some really good comments here. About the immortals being sent, created, infants and stuff, in my mind, that's still a little gray. From what I understand, immortals have this, they're born human and then they have this immortal seed in them, and they can be sensed by other immortals. At to what age, I'm not sure. It would suck to be an immortal baby, die, blah, 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 and go on from there. You guys touched on that. I don't know. I don't know if the immortal seed is something that develops, or if you know from birth. You know, we could debate the whole thing with Highlander 2. I'm just gray on that, so I'm gonna say pass on that right now. I want to talk about Jin K. I totally believe what you said, Norm. I think that he had a larger plan to basically overthrow Kel. I think he was following along with Kel to get to what he needed to do. He seemed like an honorable man, but I just don't think he got the chance. It was too late for him to happen. So I agree with you on that. Regarding the whole thing with killing Kate, that did seem out of character. But this was a... in my opinion, this was a Duncan that was years ago, and he was still learning a lot, and maybe love makes you do stupid things, and I'm thinking maybe he was caught up in that in the relationship with her, and he did something that was out of character or something that maybe he thought was right to do at the time, and of course it was not, and it did seem weird. I'm not justifying what he did. I didn't like that personally. But part of me is going, maybe that's the reason why it was written that way. So that was basically it. I wanted to touch on those. The music real quick, too. Yes, we are going to cover the Highlander music. We have to. That is so important to Highlander. I'm really excited about doing that. And I believe it was John Entwistle is the bass player for Queen. Is he the...
I thought Endless Rules was the basis for The Who.
The Who, that's right. Okay, I got them mixed up because I was thinking about Fitz. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I can't remember the bass player, but excellent musicians. They can all sing very, very well. Members of Queen. Yes, Freddie Mercury is the voice. But just like a lot of the famous bands in history, when you can have all the band members be able to harmonize and sing together, really fills out a band and their talent. And yeah. Queen was able to do that. And they were all very, very talented musicians. So, yes. So, anyway, that was my – I just want to touch on that.
You know,
get that off my chest. I've been sitting on that for like 2 weeks.
One of the interesting things, and all the way back in the old catalog, they actually had a segment of hand-picked episodes called Highlander Rocks, where they picked all the rock and roll stars from the Highlander episodes and put those into a collectible collector set. So they had Alfred Cahill was played by Martin Kemp from Spandau Ballet. And then Vanity was in an episode. And then Felice Martin, she was played by Joan Jett. She was in an episode, and obviously Fitz. So
yeah.
It wasn't any stretch of the imagination for Highlander to pick quote-unquote actors or actresses who also had musical backgrounds, especially some famous rock and rollers or rock and rollers that are trying to make the transition.
That's a show right there, is other rock and roll musicians I would love to have seen in Highlander during the 90s.
Oh, totally. Totally. I still think that we still have to do that episode where actors or actresses, rock and rollers, whatever you want to, however you prefer it, that should have been in there. For me, it's always been Julian Sands from the Warlock films.
Just because he was always playing the bad guys, I would love to have seen Gene Simmons from Kiss, because he can act and he's been playing the crazy guy, and he would have been fun to be in Highlander.
And you have you have history with Gene Simmons.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's it for me. I'm good. I got my fill of cheese and drink, and how you doing with your spirit there? You doing all right?
Oh, my spirit's good, and my drink is good too.
All right, well... Joe is playing us out. What do you say we head on out, Joe? So let's get to this show, bro.
Let's do it.
All right. All right. The topic, Blood of Kings fan pick. Jill Burdicus' Highlander TV series fan pick, Shadows. Shadows first aired November 1st, 1994. It is season 3, episode 9. I'm kind of curious, Norm. Mm-hmm. When you first saw this episode... did it kind of remind you of anything?
Oh gosh. When I first saw it?
Yeah. Well, okay, maybe more recently when we kind of reviewed it, knowing we were going to do this. Was there anything that it reminded you of, like either other episodes or other tropes or things that you would see in other television series?
Well, this is the first time that I remember seeing an immortal being able to focus psychological projections and as almost kind of like a superpower.
Okay.
Like a mutant.
That's true. Yeah.
Like Professor X. I mean,
I didn't quite pick up on that though. I thought it was more, you know, good manipulation, you know? So I know we'll touch on that a little bit more, but I thought that we would read as we mentioned before, from Fearful Symmetry, The Essential Guide to All Things Highlander, the great John Mosby's book.
The great John Mosby.
I'm going to read an excerpt from his book on Shadows. Written by David Tynan, directed by Charles Wilkinson. An unusually pensive Duncan finishes playing the piano at Joe's and heads out into the night, only to be confronted by a dark, shrouded figure with a sword whom he follows into a neighboring building. They fight, and Duncan loses, the victor taking his head. Duncan awakes from the nightmare, screaming, scaring himself and Anne. It seems that this has been a reoccurring nightmare, and it's beginning to unsettle him during the day as well. Taking a break, Duncan and Anne head to a stone carving art exhibit by old friend John Garrick, played by Garwin Sanford. Duncan remembers the paranoid England of the 1600s, when the emotionally devastated Garrick lost his entire family in a fire and was accused of witchcraft because of his apparent gift of second sight. In the modern era, he channels his own demons into his work. Outside the exhibition, in broad daylight, the shrouded figure appears to Duncan again, and he leaps in to save Anne, but Anne can't see anyone. Duncan is simply waving his sword into empty air. Anne's quick thinking saves him from being arrested, but now they are both worried for his sanity. Duncan talks with Joe for advice, and the Watcher notes that he is surprised more mortals don't have psychological problems with the amount that they go through. As Richie tries to manage a talented musician and kickstart his career, McLeod is barely managing anything. Can Garrick offer a deeper insight into losing one's mind and coming back from the edge? Or do McLeod's problems and solutions lie elsewhere?
Well,
so there you go.
Yes, well summarized, Mr. John Mosby.
So in the cast, of course, we have Adrian Paul. Lisa Howard is Dr. Ann Lindsay, Stan Kirsch, Jim Burns, and we have Garwin Sanford as John Garrick. Mm-hmm. I wanted to read an excerpt. I had Jill send me some notes on why she chose this episode. The Ahriman story just seemed like an unpacking of shadows. I suggested Shadows both because it's interesting on its own and because it seems like the genesis of the Ahriman story arc. It's a great piece for world building, and it also shows a lot of Duncan and Anne's interactions. How what is perfectly normal in a relationship becomes a problem when one person has to hide why they are having nightmares and why they are hallucinating and waving a dangerous sword about in public, and when the other person covers for them to the police even while worrying about them. The lesson Duncan learns in Shadows was, don't lay down your sword because the enemy is physical and it will take your head. In Archangel, Avatar, and Armageddon, it's lay down your sword because the enemy is spectral, and you'll only hurt, kill those around you. Anyway, rewatching Shadows is seeing the framework for the Ahriman story. And I want to mention that she sent me a screenshot of this creepy little picture of the mask inside Duncan's loft after Richie and him are talking. And it's just ending in that scene, and then these little eyes kind of appear. And it's, if you watch the episode, it's about the 27-minute, 44-second mark. She goes on to say, Jill, it drives me crazy watching this episode and remembering Ahriman. My guess would be that it was intended to look into the flashback, but I've been joking that this was Ahriman spying. So, like in that little mask I was just mentioning. Mm. When I was watching it, it kept getting stuck on how everything the unfortunate madman was telling Duncan in order to fool him and take his head applied in Ahriman case. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to give a little brief history on Ahriman, and I have it on the wiki here. Every 1,000 years, the Zoroastrian, thank you, mm-hmm. demon Ahriman returns to wreak havoc on Earth. He had been defeated centuries ago by an immortal named Timothy of Gilliam. An archaeologist warned Duncan MacLeod that he was the champion chose to do battle with the forces of evil, namely Ahriman. Mm-hmm. Duncan was skeptical until he saw people he had killed, such as James Horton and Kronos, alive and well. Others thought Duncan was losing his mind, and when he accidentally killed Richie Ryan because he thought Richie was Ahriman, Duncan felt a deep resentment and retreated to a monastery. For 1 year, Duncan was missing from the Watcher's database, and even Joe couldn't find him. 1 year later, Duncan returned to Paris to visit Richie's grave and meet Ahriman, who was disguised as Kronos and Horton. Duncan vowed to destroy Ahriman. A mysterious woman named Sophie Baines knew how to defeat the demon, and though she had died, her spirit guided Duncan and, along with the help of Joe and Father Beaufort, allowed Duncan to defeat the evil demon. Mm-hmm. What's your impressions?
There's a lot. There is a lot to reel back, and let's kind of like, because this is a really interesting episode. I have to agree with Jill that there is in some way a spiritual connection between Shadows and the Ahriman trilogy, which was the end of season 5 and the beginning of season 6. This is when, at the very end of season 5, this is when Duncan kills his student and his best friend.
Yeah.
And because what happened to him was an act of psychological warfare on the part of Ahriman, this Zoroastrian demon god who's supposed to be the champion to be able to slay. But with this episode, I think that the first question that we have to address is, when you are dealing with somebody who has as combatively superior as Duncan is, I mean, he's a well-practiced immortal. He knows his sword work. He is well-studied in martial arts. How do you defeat a physically superior hero? You defeat him mentally.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that that's the impetus of this episode.
I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to touch on the DVD special features on Shadows. There was three segments, and we're going to get into that in a moment. But I want to talk. The first thing I want to mention is what F. Bron McAsh had to say.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned that he's the only immortal on screen to actually kill Duncan, albeit it is in a dream sequence. Bron got to double as the role of the Shadow. Shadows was the only episode that had five sword fights in one episode, which was challenging on a 7-day shoot. They said, like, on day one, they had to shoot a fight sequence. Day two, day three. The Shadow costume was a challenge to fight in as well. He used a fencing mask to create the black mask, and the hood over the mask meant that Bron's visibility was very limited. The Shadow's long, loose sleeves, called the tippets, had to be sewn up to his wrist to give him more mobility so the sleeves didn't get caught in anything. Also, he couldn't bend his knees or he would step on the inside of his robed costume. He noted that in four of the five fight scenes as the Shadow, he had done four of the fight scenes in the Shadow. He also mentioned that he was sick with a 102 degree fever at the time of fighting during the dojo scenes. He had also given Adrian praise on the beautiful sword kata routine that Duncan performs in the dojo by himself. Mm-hmm. Bron was challenged with getting this and all of these fights into one episode. And he mentioned something in this interview that I wanted to ask you, Norm. Mm-hmm. He mentions Duncan's under the influence of a sleeping drug. Was this mentioned in the episode?
Well, it's the drugs that Anne gave him to sleep at the very end. He pops that entire bottle of pills.
Oh, okay. That's right. I remember that. Yeah, I thought it was something that Garrick had given him.
I mean, it could have been. I didn't see exactly what it was, or I'm not exactly sure if she mentioned the drug, but it could have been something like, you know, Prozac or some kind of like muscle relaxant or something that just allowed him to, you know, like a sleeping pill.
But okay,
you're supposed to have those with, like, you know, two pills with like some food before you go to bed. He pops the entire bottle of pills.
Yes. The other two segments, David Abramowitz talks about kind of the direction they wanted to take. And then David Tynan talks about the Duncan and Anne's relationship, which we'll touch on a little bit later, Norm. Mm-hmm. But I want to mention what David Abramowitz says. David realized that episodes in Highlander didn't always work when they didn't include other immortals, especially a bad immortal for Duncan to face. David's quote, "A hero is judged against the ferocity of the villain." In this episode, they wanted a different immortal villain, not one that was stronger or more skilled than Duncan in sword fighting, but one that could get into his mind, manipulate and weaken him first, and doing this by preying on his guilt and fears from the lives Duncan has taken and the lives he couldn't save. And David Abramowitz also quoted by saying, "The best way to defeat the immortal who is in your dreams is to deny his existence, kind of like the best trick the devil has to convince everyone that he doesn't exist." They wanted to create a different kind of villain, not another best gun in town that comes into town episode, and also give them a chance to make an episode with different visuals, different look of the show, and to play it a bit darker. What's your take on that?
I think that it was a really smart idea and was one worth trying because, like I said before, when you have a hero that is physically superior than most other villains that have been introduced, it's really easy to just create a tropey villain that is just bigger, stronger, more physical, has, you know, great backup behind him, you know, kind of like Slan with his shooting pommel and stuff like that. Okay, but that becomes old and very almost uninteresting after a while. But the reason why you keep bringing him up, the reason why you love James Horton, is because he's not immortal, but he has every mental skill at his disposal to be able to...
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? He can play that mental chess with Duncan, and he beats him at every turn. And he can't feel him coming. So that's the great thing about introducing the aspect of someone who's being able to manipulate and prey upon your strengths and weaknesses. And an episode that I love bringing up all the time because it's one of my favorites, Forgive Us Our Trespasses. Stephen Keen wears Duncan down with facts. These are the facts, Duncan. You are a cold-blooded murderer. You murdered my lord in cold blood in the open sunlight. And now you're going to pay for the crimes that you have committed against my people. Okay? Now, even though that Duncan was revenging himself, the Battle of Culloden, and what happened afterwards.
That gets in his head, man.
It does get into his head. And that's the one thing that, you know, Amanda and Mythos had to weigh. How do I advise Duncan? Because Duncan's like, I did. I killed all those people. You know, and it's kind of like that same finger that Duncan's pointing at Mythos at the and comes a horseman. He's like, did you kill all those people? But Mythos is like, yeah, times are different. That's who I was. Big deal. I'm over it. But Duncan can't get over it. That's his problem. Yeah. He can't get over the guilt that he racks himself with as our consummate hero. Because the hero always has to worry about, what did I do? Did the ends justify the means? And in this case, Garrick is really preying on that.
Good point. Well, I wanted to round out the other segment that was on the special features, and then, of course, we're going to touch on these topics later in the show here. David Tynan, the executive script consultant and writer, he comments on the status of Duncan and Anne's relationship and its lack of development. He says Anne was in Duncan's life peripherally, and that she was not aware of Duncan's secret life of immortality, which created distance between them and possibly the actors. Anne was a counterweight to Duncan, as she saved lives because she was a doctor, and she didn't know about Duncan's secret of taking lives. He noted that the audience and the writers really wanted to see the relationship do something or not. They, as in the writers, thought it was too early to bring Anne into the fold, the secret world of immortals. In the end, they felt that there wasn't a real on-screen chemistry and attraction between these two characters. David Tynan goes on to say that some fans were upset that Anne's character left the show, and that Duncan would be tied down if he had had a strong love interest, i.e. Tessa, and that they were very leery about tying him down in that way. They didn't want Duncan in the end to bring Anne into his world, which created tension between the characters. Mm-hmm. What's your first impression on that?
So I think it's actually really fortuitous that we're doing this episode and having this subject matter brought up, because in the previous fan pick, our first fan pick, and that was Vince Stefanelli's Mortal Sins, we have seen Anne exit the show because of the violence that is exposed to her when Ernst Daimler takes her and puts not only her, but her baby in jeopardy.
And she's been exposed to the immortal world as well.
Exactly. So
yeah,
I've always felt, and I feel this more strongly now watching it with the hindsight and the distance of time, and some maturity, I think, that Anne's character is actually a very good character and a good relationship for Duncan. And the way that I am seeing it being approached now is not so much that she was either unwritten or underdeveloped. It's just that Duncan can't afford to fall in love again at this point in time with a wound so fresh from Tessa. Because if he lost Anne, I'm not sure what that would do to him at this time. Losing someone again so closely to the woman that he has been in love with for the last 10 years, was going to marry and settle down with. He lost her to violence, and now he's finally opened himself up. But I don't think he fully can, because in doing so, allows Anne to be exposed to the violence of the immortal gathering world. And I'm not sure if he's ready to do that yet, if ever.
Yeah, you know, when I was looking at reading or watching that interview with David Tynan about that, I was looking at the list of all of the episodes that Dr. Anne Lindsay was in. There was several that she was credited only, but it was not in the episode. They're pretty hardcore episodes. They're not this type of bonding episode. There was always some type of emergency or, you know, something, you know, and I think that writing-wise, I think they kind of doomed them from the beginning, to be honest with you. Mm. They wanted to have some type of love interest, and I think the mistake that they made was not exposing her to Duncan's world sooner. Mm-hmm. I think things would have been more interesting that way. Not necessarily recreate the Tessa thing, But even if it was like kind of a friendship at first type of thing, I think that would have been interesting. And, you know, a lot of people want to compare, you know, well, she's not Amanda, she's not Tess. Well, when it comes to Amanda, the reason why Amanda and Duncan's relationship works is because they're not like boyfriend, girlfriend. She comes in, they might have a romance and have an adventure, and then she's gone, and then she comes in. They've been doing that for hundreds of years. And that's what we like. It comes, it you know, there's always something interesting or some type of baggage that Amanda will bring into the story that makes it fun and interesting. And mm-hmm. then, you know, then they do have moments together that are very romantic, and you know, it's great when they share that. But they don't have that every episode relationship. You know, they don't have that boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. And I think that was the right way to write those characters. And that's why we love them so much, because they each have their own thing, and but yet they do find somewhere to connect. I honestly think the relationship with Anne was kind of doomed from the beginning. I love the character of Dr. Anne Lindsay. I love the fact that she is a doctor. And I think that even though she does save lives, I think that would have been kind of more of an interesting thing if she had been brought into the fold knowing what was going on, and that would have made for some interesting writing. And then they said, you know, there's some comparisons of where there wasn't any chemistry between the actors. I don't think that's the reason. Those are both very good actors. They can do the chemistry. That was sheerly the writing, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
And I also,
and I'm not blaming the writers. I'm just thinking I think they should have brought her character in, and really, then she would have been closer to Duncan in that way.
But I also think that if there was an issue with the chemistry between Adrian Paul and Lisa Howard, it almost worked for the dynamic because they were never really quite connected, because Duncan never really quite connected anyway. There were always scenes where he is keeping her at an arm's length and never really confiding in her and letting her in. There were many times where she basically said, I thought we were in a relationship.
Yeah.
And Duncan's like, yeah, but on my terms.
Let's put it out there. This episode, he's kind of a jerk to her. Let's put it that way.
Let's be honest here. And I'm sure that people are probably going to scream at it, you know, when we say stuff like this. But you know what? He was a 100% total jerk to her.
Yeah, yeah. And there's that one scene that bugs me that I don't like the way his character responds to her, where, you know, it's in the morning and she says something like, you know, you'll tell me if there's something wrong, right? And then he kind of looks at her and goes, why wouldn't I?
He kind of snaps at her a little bit.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, the right way to answer that would be, yes, I would. Yeah. You know, thank you for caring.
It's almost as if they were strangers.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was written that way or what, but that particular scene bothered me. She really could have like been there and helped him, and if he would have accepted that a little bit more, mm-hmm. that would have been interesting. But
yeah.
I want to talk about what you say here, the anti-Anne fans. I want to touch on that.
Okay, so when I was watching this in real time and going on kind of like the primitive chat boards. The Reicher chat boards. And I'm saying primitive, not in a derogatory kind of way, but
you got to date us now, man. You got to date this.
So, well, I mean, this episode came out
late 90s.
Yeah, well, 1994 is when this episode came out. But I don't think that I was on the boards until maybe like a year or two after. A lot of like some of the fans on the HLBB Facebook page, you know, these are the original forum people. I was there. I was more lurking than I was participating. But even at some of the conventions when I was in Baltimore, or when I went to the convention out in 1998 in Anaheim, there weren't a lot of people that were on the were fans of Anne bandwagon, let's put it. And I think probably because, in my opinion, we were wholesale sold on Tessa from the very beginning, from the gathering when Duncan said, you know, I love you and you know, we've been with you in 10 years. I mean, there's a whole history between those two. And Alexander Vandernoot sold that very well. And when she was shot in the darkness and when she died, that broke our hearts wholesale, everybody. Every fan, yeah. We were just in tears when that happened. And it took a while from, you know, the midpoint of season two. I mean, sure, he had a role in The Hay with Andy Devlin. Kind of, you know, everyone's like, how would you do that? How could you do that to Tessa? But, you know, there's a whole reactionary reason to that. It was grief more than anything else. There were things that helped Duncan along the way, but nothing that really connected him to a new relationship. And now Dr. Anne Lindsay comes along. And whether it is a byproduct of the actors not having the right chemistry together or the writing not being there, for some strange reason, the fans just didn't at the time connect with Dr. Anne Lindsay. They didn't want to buy into a character that was going to be another either damsel in distress type character, the girlfriend backup character, or a character that kind of amounts to nothing more than really a plot device. And I think that she was better than that as a character. She could have been better than that. And I think that Lisa Howard brought a lot more to than just the stereotypical trope of the girlfriend in these extreme circumstances. But I don't think, just like Anne Lindsay, I don't think that they ever fully committed to allowing her into the show. I always felt that she was right behind everyone else. You know, she was a glorified guest star and not part of the main cast. And I think that really did a disservice to her because I really liked what she brought on screen. She was tough and she didn't really take a lot of bull.
No, she was very straightforward. And you know, there was certain scenes when we were talking about Mortal Sins that she was, her acting was on point. Mm-hmm. And there's that one scene in Shadows where she's riding in Duncan's car and she's like turning and looking at him and he's, you know, talking to her, telling her what's going on, and just the way that she's delivering it and the look in her face of heartbreak mm-hmm. and disappointment and worry just sells it. And this is where I'm convinced that the chemistry between the two actors has nothing to do with them not having chemistry. It's with them trying to work with the script and work how that is, you know, and how Duncan is keeping the character of Duncan is keeping her at arm's length and not bringing her into the fold.
Well, I think you have to kind of allocate the resources and let's take a look at this episode in terms of its components. You have the A story, which is the Duncan is dealing with the Garrick story. You know, that's the A story. Yeah. Then you have the B story with Duncan and Anne, because Anne's trying to figure out why this man who she is in love with isn't allowing her into that next phase of their relationship. And then you have the C story with Richie and Corey Lightning, or, you know, Corey Lightning Fingers, or whatever the guy's name is. And I understand that let's be the pragmatists here, you know, that Stan Kirsch obviously has contractual obligations and he is allowed his screen time and his script time and all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't serve the story at all. You can throw away the Corey Lightning story and it doesn't even change what's happening in the episode at all, right?
And we're talking about the young musician that he's trying to trying to be an agent for and, you know,
right.
trying to
it, sometimes,
get behind
sometimes
it.
Sometimes when I see stuff like that, they're trying to figure out what they want to do with Richie because he's either learning to try and be an immortal from Duncan, at least in season 3. He's trying to figure out, you know, what he's doing at Joe's dojo or Charlie's dojo. Is he trying to run it? Is he trying to be some type of entertainment agent? Or is he later on, is he, you know, when he goes off into Paris, is he trying to be a professional motorcycle rider? You know, you don't really get what's going on there. But I think that time could have been better allocated to fleshing out what was happening with Duncan and Anne.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
There were too many balls in the air. There were too many plates being spun.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because in the some of the special features, they mention that story and that there's actually more to it, but they ended up having to cut some of it because it was going long. So they did cut the C down a little bit even more. But you're right. I just A and B would have been fine with me there. Mm-hmm. Well, as we touched on the A plot, I think that's what we need to dive into. Unless there's a couple more points you want to say on Anne and Duncan.
No, let's jump right
okay.
into the A plot.
Let's just say, though, let's tell the fans out there, let's give her another chance. You know, I'm going to say I'm a big Lisa Howard fan. I know you are. Mm-hmm. She's great. I'd love to get her on the show sometime. I just wish the writers would have, let her into the world of immortals a little sooner.
Well, with everything, and I try and stress this, and it's helped me reconcile a lot of things. As we're watching things again or rewatching things, we're seeing things from a different perspective, a different time and different experiences. And I think that when you rewatch episodes, especially season 3, with Lisa Howard as Anne Lindsay in it, I think that for some of us, and hopefully for most of us, we'll see things with a different perspective.
Well, that happened to me a bit with this episode, and we'll touch on that now. Let's talk about Duncan's nightmares and the take on the show's darker look and different immortal, as David Abramowitz had referred to in the special features. And this is the A-plot story. Norm, I got to be completely honest with you. When this was chosen by Jill, I was going like, okay, I got to remember, I got to watch that episode. Because I, to be honest with you, I was very kind of, I didn't remember it that well. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I watched it. And do you remember what I said to you in a message? And go ahead and be honest. When I first watched it again?
Honestly, I don't. What did you say to me?
Okay. I'll tell you. I said, Norm, I think this is one, this is one of those episodes I didn't like.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've come around on it, but let me tell you the reason why I kind of wrote this off when I first originally saw it and seen it again. This episode originally for me fell into one of my biggest pet peeves when it comes to television storytelling and in some movies. Every TV series that we all know and love has what's called the mind bleepery episodes. And I'm using the word bleep instead of the F word. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
A lot of those, like, for example, the Star Trek episodes, there's always a mind bleepery episode.
Like when Troy is seen as like a cake.
Every Troy episode was a mind bleepery episode. Right. It seemed like. Exactly. That's been one of my least favorite tropes or plot points that a lot of these TV series pull from. I can't stand those. Mm-hmm. Because I don't like how you're not quite sure what's real, what's reality, what's not, and they don't always tell you. And it just, you know, it's one of those things that is just my biggest pet peeve. And this one fell into that category. And I didn't really give it a shot. I didn't look deeper into it because of that. But because we looked into this, my perspective on it and my mind is opened. And I have a different perspective on this, but that was my first impression when I watched this again. And I'm being honest with you.
Good.
Jill, don't get mad at me. I'm being honest with you. how do you feel about the mind bleepery episodes in television and movies? What's your take on that?
It really depends on how they're treated and how the context is being used when it comes to mind manipulation episodes. I just watched a recent episode of Babylon 5, and it had to do with basically something like this, where you're having characters, main characters, being visited by otherworldly incarnations of characters from the past. And you know that's not happening in real time. It's just it's a construct of writing and trying to force something that usually isn't seen by an audience, you know, something that is just a little bit off tangent and a little askew.
Right.
And I think that when I first saw this episode, my first reaction was, I didn't know Immortals could do that. And what I'm referencing is that John Garrick, the villain in this episode, has the ability to mentally project his dreams into other Immortals, in this case, Duncan. And I'm like, so if Duncan takes his quickening, does he get the ability to do that too?
Okay, question. where exactly in the episode do you get that from?
I think I got it from when he's starting to talk about like Jung and Freud and the books that he's reading and what's called the definition of something he called racial memory. And the racial memory, I looked this up and I said, I don't know what that means. And from Google, it said that a racial memory is a psychological term, meaning that feelings, patterns of thought, and fragments of experience have been transmitted from generation to generation in all humans and have deeply influenced mind and behavior. You know, when we have those dreams, and everyone that's listening out there have had similar dreams of when you're having you're speaking to the public and you don't have any clothes on, or you forgot everything that you studied the night before a test and you don't remember anything, or you feel like you're falling off of a cliff and you're falling forever.
Yeah.
Those are racial memories. And I think that once he brought that up and all the studying that he did with all the great psychological minds, it gave him the ability to tap into mental projection. That's something that I felt he studied.
Are we getting mental projection confused with really good manipulation?
Well, he also said that, I think at the end, he said, I studied for years being able to project my thoughts, my dreams into subjects. In this case, Duncan. So there was this whole kind of, it is a trope where the villain's kind of like, haha, I'm, before I kill you, I'm going to tell you my master plan and how this worked. So.
Yeah, well, you do quote him. He says, I've spent time in analysis more than anyone in history.
Yeah.
Yeah. An interesting take on Immortal, someone who was possibly a possible case study for some of the most influential psychologists in history, such as Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung. Mm-hmm. Now, when Duncan mentions the racial memory, the impression that I got was this was something that immortals really get, I guess. I don't know. This is something that really happens mostly with them. That was kind of what I got from it. Am I not getting that right?
Well, it's possible that this particular death construct is a little bit stronger with immortals because, I mean, figure this out. As mortals, we're always kind of fascinated with the aspect of the afterlife and how this is going to happen and the Grim Reaper and all that kind of iconography. But in this case, with the immortals, they know that they can live forever, but at any one point in time, they can die. And the nightmare that Duncan had at the very beginning of the episode is that he lost. He lost to death. And I think that's something that plagues all immortals. I mean, let's take it, Brian Cullen, for example. Brian Cullen, there was a great episode with the greatest swordsman of Europe, and he can beat anybody, has bested everybody, but he can't take it anymore. So he turned to drugs, and he turned to ways that would alter his reality so he didn't have to face up to the fact that one day he's going to get taken out. And I think that's something that Garrick knew, was able to project through this racial memory, through this fear of death, through this ever encroaching Grim Reaper figure, and plug that into Duncan's psychosis and start causing him real psychological trauma. Because it's not only that I'm facing my own death, but I'm being weighed and measured and found wanting in a way during the time of my judgment, which is what's happening.
You know, this is one of those mind bleepery episodes, right? Where the bad guy is getting in the mind of the good guy and manipulating him and messing with him and, you know, bringing him down. I'm starting to second guess immortals here in Highlander, bro.
In what way?
Our immortals in Highlander can be killed, thus not making them immortal.
Right.
If you look up immortal, it says living forever, never dying or decaying. Mm-hmm. The definition of immortal means you can't die, but
right.
Immortals can. You can cut their head off.
Well, that's yeah, that's the one caveat. They have the ability to go on forever unless ...
It's just a different type of human, you know? I mean, come on. Because you touched about it before in the last episode when you guys were talking about the questions from the Blood of Kings fans. You're questioning, or you're talking about how they are human mm-hmm. at first, you know, and they have human emotions and they feel pain and stuff. But you know, it's funny how they are called immortal, but you can kill them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm getting into this, man.
That's what this episode brings up. It's that they're immortal in that aspect of being able to live forever up until a point, but they're still mortal in the same sense that the psychological effect that certain things can have on them still works. Guilt and remorse the ability to feel that over centuries of time.
Which is what Garrick is using against Duncan. You know, he's getting in his mind here. And the reason why I like this pick by Jill is that it's getting in my mind.
Makes you think. Things that make you go,
Well, I want to Exactly. Well, I want to talk about Garrick's history with Duncan here. We have the flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out and define the moment, other than the obvious, of why Garrick is pissed off at Duncan and why he wants revenge. Okay, so there's the scene where Garrick is burned alive. Yeah. But Duncan had mentioned, I thought you got away on that horse. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And so Garrick is upset because Duncan didn't come back to help him.
Yeah, he just kind of said, you know, get on your horse and ride. Ride as fast as you can. And then Garrick went the wrong way and the mob grabbed him. And he thought that Duncan would say, hey, Duncan would protect him because Duncan's the hero. You know, Duncan saves everybody. He obviously saved a girl and her cat. So I think that, but also I do believe that Garrick was also not right when
he's a troubled man. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you know, he was suffering from the second sight. You know, he was extraordinary during the time of witches and witchcraft and, you know, when they were burned alive at the stake for things as asinine as this. But I don't think that he was quite all there to begin with. You know, I don't think that we're dealing with a sane and rational person. And then Joe even said this later on when, you know, he was talking to Richie and Richie's like, you know, do you believe in all this psychological mumbo jumbo? And he's like, hey, who have you been talking to? And he's like, oh, you know, Garrick's John Garrick. That guy's crazy. He's always been crazy.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, that's at least where Richie's story kind of cross references, being, relevant in some way, but you could have easily written that into Anne as well.
Well, it brings up a good point. I'm glad you mentioned Joe's comment about that because he had mentioned to Duncan, like, with everything you guys go through, with all the emotional baggage and everything that, you know, how they deal with it mm-hmm. and not deal with it,
yeah.
You know, kind of makes you wonder if, like, you know, they should have had an immortal psychologist to help some of these guys, you know?
The closest we got to that was Sean Burns.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Sean Burns, he listened to and tried to at least put into perspective a lot of what was going on. Graham Ash kind of did for Duncan. You know, it's like, you know, why are we doing all this? You know, we fight to survive. No, we don't fight to survive. We fight to survive so we can live and enjoy what life has to offer. So there are a lot of different ways that you can spin that. And like I said, in Brian Cullen's lifestyle, you know, he was always looking over his shoulder. So that was another way of seeing how immortality isn't really what it's all that it's cracked up to be. So it depends, again, on how as a mortal you lived your life and how as a mortal you are using that to influence your immortal life. So this episode does bring up a lot of questions of the psychology of immortals and how immortals really respond to the violence and the compounded nature of what has happened to him in the past and how that helps him in the future.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You'd mentioned here a quote by Joe, 400 years of all your friends dying and everyone after your head. Maybe he's been a rock for too long.
It's possible. And let's go all the way back to Sigur. Sigur said the almost exact same thing to him. He's like, you know, you've spent all this time, like, watching your friends die, but at the same time, you have the ability to keep their memories alive. So that's another way of looking at it. That's why I love, like, all these different facets of what's happening in the storytelling, is that you get to see the positive side of immortality and being able to see history and art and culture thrive and survive into the ages. Also, you have to carry along the fact that sooner or later, the people that you love and know will eventually leave you and you can't do anything about it. And I'm talking about mortality. So that's always something that I think that's affect every immortal, you know, that we see.
Yeah. Yeah. You had mentioned here too, the scene where Mac almost kills Richie reminded you of what happened between the two of them at the end of Something Wicked, even though that episode doesn't come till season 4.
Yeah.
Elaborate on that.
Well, it's just one of those nuggets where you're looking at these two. And I said, after I saw Duncan, albeit that Duncan was a little out of his mind and he just finished up that gorgeous sword kata, which is one of my all-time favorite scenes in Highlander, that Duncan, out of his own faculties, is very dangerous to everyone around him because he's so good at what he does. He's such a trained and precise warrior and so driven and focused that if he's pointed in a certain direction, God help you if you're in the direction of that path.
And to clarify the people that don't know what sword kata means, Norm, this is the kind of tradition routine that he does with his sword in his traditional Japanese garb, and also was referenced by F. Bron McAsh and how Adrian Paul did an excellent job. It's that exercise routine that he did by himself in the dojo.
A kata is a form. There are several of them.
It's a form.
Yeah, and it's a method of discipline and precision and meditation and the ability to repeat perfection and find some type of peace in that perfect repetition. It's also hones your craft and it keeps you precise and sharp. But again, that's one of the things in Duncan that we saw all the time. He was always practicing. He was always honing his skill. He was always trying to be better and pushing himself so that any time that he is encountered by another immortal, he is in tip-top physical and mental condition. This time he's in physical condition, not so much mental.
Yeah. I get they want to have a different look of the show, make it darker, but do you literally have to have the room almost complete in darkness while he's doing that kata? If he knows how dark that room was.
The episode's called Shadows for a reason, because pretty much everything is. But no, going back to the, it was almost kind of foreshadowing when you saw Duncan attack Richie. And when I saw that particular scene, not knowing what was to come, I said, you know what? There's going to be a point in time in this series where things are going to come to a boil between these two.
Yeah.
And it happens and it happens a season later.
It's funny. You had the same comment I was thinking of, having a quickening inside your own house.
Oh, that's the worst place to have a quickening. Think about that. I mean, his apartment was a mess to begin with, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, I took this guy's set. Oh, I should have done this outside. Darn it. Now I got to clean up everything.
I'm looking inside my old Bloody King studio here. I'm thinking if there was a quickening in here, I would just go insane.
Well, remember when we were talking about...
I would say to any fellow immortal, look, can we please just take this outside? Let's go to my neighbor's house instead.
Remember we were talking about the stuff that you would save from your house in case there was a fire?
Yeah.
Sorry, man. The quickening would take everything out of that room.
I know.
Kiss your TNG autograph collection goodbye. You know, it would blow up all my statues.
Oh, I know. God, that'd be heartbreaking. I want to touch on the last thing you touched on here. It says, all joking aside, much like we discussed about Ernst Daimler in our previous fan pick, Mortal Sins, immortals do not have the choice when it comes to absorbing their vanquished enemy's quickening. So all of Garrick's darkness, insanity, and vengeance, all of that is McCloud's now. So how will it affect him in the future? Will this give him the discipline and control over the demons, since he will also absorb Garrick's experiences from learning from Freud, Jung, and other professionals and pioneers in the mental health fields? Well said, by the way, bro.
Thank you. And maybe that's where the doorway opens up to what Jill is saying about how Duncan later on is affected by the Ahriman dynamic, and how he is a little bit more easily manipulated when it comes to this type of this mental struggle that he's having with, is this real? Is this not real? Because the only time that you really ever see Duncan suffering any weakness in the episode is when his conscience is being challenged. Not so much his body or his physical nature, but his conscience, his heart and his soul. That which drives him, his personal honor. So I always thought that was really interesting. And then, yeah, Garrick is now part of him. Everything that made up Garrick is part of him. So what does that mean? The good and the bad.
Well, as we start to wrap this up, Norm, I want to touch on Jill's notes about how this affected her with foreshadowing the Ahriman. Is it a trilogy, would you call it, maybe?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she's got an excellent point on that. Mm-hmm. You know, it deals with similar themes here. And also, this was the death of Richie, which hit a lot of fans really, really hard. There's a lot of fans out there that ignore a lot of stuff that's happened after the death of Richie because they don't want to believe that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, you know, and that you know, I know that David Abramowitz said if he had to change things again, he wouldn't. He would still wrote. He would have still gone with that. You know.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on that?
Well,
and you know, Jill's point on that.
I think that the Armin story was taking almost kind of like this lateral step in storytelling, because when it comes to Duncan, probably more than any other immortal in Highlander, if you always put the big bad villain in front of him, especially physical villains, real tough villains, you know, very physical and very strong, good sword fighters like a Kronos, the Four Horsemen, you know, they're physical people. They're physical entities that Duncan can touch and feel and affect, and he knows exactly what he needs to do in order to beat these villains. But now the villain's inside his mind, you know?
Yeah.
And the villain inside his mind forced him into a situation where he did the unthinkable. And how do you recover from that? I think it's a testament to Duncan's fortitude that he was able to move past what happened to Richie, find an inner peace, and continue to be that hero. Because it's not that he just vanquished Ahriman. Ahriman, in very, very specific terms, was able to almost vanquish Duncan, the champion, because Duncan was broken at the end of that when taking out Richie. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it's...
And, he was.
And his... We always like seeing our heroes, in the mythological term, suffer through the labyrinth of their own peril and their own conscience in that darkness and climb to the top, climb back into the light. And I think that that is what the Ahriman story allowed Duncan to do. And it changed him, because he surrendered his sword for so many episodes because he just couldn't bring himself to becoming that violent of a hero again. He wanted to go a different way until, well, I personally like to think that until he couldn't, because this, you know, the nature of the immortal game pushed him to pick up his sword again. But I think that all the fans were crying bloody murder and say, give him his sword back, damn it.
Yeah, I agree with you. The it's funny, as I was reviewing this episode for the show, I was thinking about this is one of those mind bleepery things, as I told you about, one of my biggest pet peeves. And yes, as I mentioned before, I kind of wrote it off. But when Jill had mentioned what she said about kind of the foreshadowing of the Ahriman thing, I started thinking about those episodes, and I didn't have that mind bleepery pet peeve thing going on when I was watching those because of everything that else was involved. And of course, Adrian's performance, and of course, seeing the actors come back and portray the people that had been haunting him, you know, like Horton, like Hudson is Horton, mm-hmm. and Kronos and all those guys back, that was interesting too. So I had to kind of reevaluate how I approach this episode. And I get a lot more out of it now. And I'll be honest with you, though. I really enjoy the B plot more than I do the A plot, the relationship with Anne. Because there's things in that relationship for me that are realistic. And I think Jill had mentioned about how a simple conversation will just go south.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's reality. You know, something could just be said wrong, a tone of voice, a phrase with someone you love, a girlfriend, you know, a wife, whatever. And something just kicks in and just, you know, just churns someone's emotions. And that's what I liked about that episode. I really enjoy them working off each other. Of course, Duncan was a jerk most of the episode to her, and we touched on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that interesting, you know, and the idea of having an immortal not be as skilled as Duncan and coming in at a different angle to weaken him and to try and kill him, I thought was interesting as well. I didn't really quite kind of gravitate towards that and the history that he had with his mental issues and the type of villain, I guess, that he was. The only problem I had is, why was Duncan friends with this guy in the first place? Duncan kind of likes to go for hard luck cases sometimes, you know? Yeah. And I was noticing that because the next episode after this, I was letting it play on next episode was this, the blackmail episode. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a couple things that reminded me of that. But
starring one of our friends, Anthony DeLongis as Lyman Curley.
Yeah, Anthony DeLongis. Yes, yes. But there was that guy that was going to be hanged that Duncan was kind of like, you know, trying to help. You know, he's always trying to help the helpless. Yeah. You know,
that's who he is, though.
And yeah, that's who he is. But I got to be honest with you. I respect this episode a lot more now, diving into it, and I don't think of it now as the mind bleepery episode as I still think of a lot of other TV shows have done. It's not one of my favorites, but I like it for what it is. And like I said, I really enjoy the B plot more than the A plot, to be honest with you, just because of the relationship aspect with Duncan and Anne.
Well, we're fortunate enough in this episode not to have a Troy shaped cellular peptide cake.
Oh God, that was a bad episode.
Right.
yeah. Well, okay. Well, let's wrap this up, Norm.
Okay.
In Kevin's immortal quickening scale, one being bad, like Katana, Richie season two.
Ooh.
Two, Michael Christian, Richie's jacket.
Wait a second. Richie's
three,
jacket.
Immortal Chimoli.
Richie's jacket is better than Richie in season two.
Yes. Yes.
I agree.
Yes. four, Canis, five, Luther and Fitz. By the way, what would be another pairing for Canis at number four, do you think?
Oh gosh. Let's see. You know, Canis isn't a terrible immortal. Okay, let's somebody like, you know, Rowdy Piper. You know, he's kind of like in there. You know, he was kind of threatening,
okay.
But you know, he wasn't overtly threatening.
Yeah, okay. I like that. Number four. Okay. Yeah. Number five, we have Luther and Fitz, as we mentioned. Six, Xavier and Amanda, seven, Connor and Kurgan. Eight, we have Duncan. Who could we pair with Duncan? Could anyone pair with Duncan?
Oh, gosh. You know, in terms of what we would get out of a quickening from Duncan?
Yeah.
I would probably say Caradwyn.
Okay. All right. I like that. And then nine, of course, we have Darius. Mm-hmm. 10, we have Mythos.
Yeah.
And if you want to go all out, 11 is all four horsemen.
That's big.
From 1 to 10, mm-hmm. What is your pick of Shadows?
I think Shadows falls a very solid Luther and Fitzcarron. I think that it's strong. It has
That's five. That's right in the middle.
Yeah,
it's
number five. It's a really good episode. It brings up a lot of great concepts, but I think that it just needs to be a little tighter as a story. I think that if you focus a little bit more on spending the C plot of Richie and Corey Lightning and focus it more on either why Duncan is friends with John Garrick. Like you said, Duncan likes falling for hard luck cases. Maybe there's something, maybe Duncan knew Garrick's wife who was burned alive in the fire. Maybe he knew her and then turned through her, met John Garrick. You know, so you wanted to see a little bit more of what was at stake with Duncan, as opposed to everything just went south as soon as he saw John Garrick. You know, it seemed that that plot point was a little accelerated. Or spending a little bit more time with Anne, like, why are you treating me like this? I thought we had something special. And if we don't have anything special, then we really got to kind of figure out what's going on. Either way, I'm still a doctor, and I'm interested as to why you don't have any medical records and why you're all of a sudden going crazy.
You shouldn't have done that, Anne.
You went behind my back. So,
man, he was mean. What? Then he starts yelling at everyone, like, "Haven't you ever seen an argument before?"
I know. I've had arguments with Carol, and Carol and I have had a relationship for almost nearly 17 years now, and I have never had that kind of an explosive anything in public ever. Shadows or not. What about you?
Real quick, I just got to mention, the character of Anne was so patient, and she has to be because she's a doctor, but man, she composed herself pretty well for, you know, getting that part of Duncan. I got to give it to her.
A lot of benefit of the doubt on her end.
Yeah. On the immortal scale, I'm kind of feeling what you're saying. You know, I think I'm gonna give it like a 4.5, 5, like a Canis, and then maybe a part of a Hugh Fitzcairn. You know, originally though, I would have put it towards the bottom when I was telling you my first impressions of this, and I was kind of writing it off with the whole mind bleepery thing. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I enjoy this episode a little bit more after diving into it and kind of really looking at the relationship of Anne and Duncan, and the different take on a bad guy. You know, and I thought that was brave of the writers to do that and to not have, you know, the muscle one, the guy that is really good at honing his sword skill. And, you know, and so I thought that was interesting. There's a couple little things that I still had little issues with, you know, like, you know, why he really hates Duncan. And of course, you know, we touched on that a little bit. But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just give it a good 5. Luther hit fit, you know. Hugh Fitzcairn as well. So yeah, that's where I'm feeling it.
Cool.
So, well, I think, Norm, that we need to give a very big special thanks to Jill for participating and suggesting a very interesting pick. And I got to give it to her. I didn't expect this pick, and I think it's fascinating, and I'm really happy she did.
Well, we have to thank Jill overall because she's a huge supporter of a lot of what we do on Blood of Kings.
Yes.
She's very active on Twitter. She's very active on the boards. And I can't wait to meet her in October. I do believe she's coming to the convention, the 25th anniversary convention, but you had a chance to meet her.
I believe so.
You saw her in Lakeland, so I'm glad that you had a chance to meet her.
Yeah, she was so cool. Great to meet her. And she was in one of the sword experiences, too. I think she teamed up with Aaron.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, it was really cool. We interviewed her too at the Blood of Kings booth, and it was just really cool. She's an awesome person, and looking forward to spending some more time with her at the convention. And Jill, I want to say thank you again very much. But you know what, Jill, we're not done with you yet. Mm-hmm. We're gonna tease the next episode because, just like we did with Mortal Sins, in our next episode, we're gonna be doing the audio commentary of your episode pick of Shadows.
I can't wait. I love
you ready for that, Norm?
I love our audio commentaries. We have so much fun doing those.
We do. We do. And we've gotten some compliments about those, and I appreciate that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But you know what, Norm? Mm. On the Fandom Podcast Network, we talk about other things other than Highlander. And I want to mention a new show. Another family member here at the Fandom Podcast Network. Mm-hmm. We now have a Alfred Hitchcock podcast called Good Evening, mm-hmm. done by our friends Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shea Mutala, and Chris Haig. Mm-hmm. Huge, huge fans of Alfred Hitchcock. And we have just released, actually, 3 episodes. One is a kind of a getting to know you. Kyle and I did an interview, and then they recorded, actually, I think it was 2 or 3 other episodes that are now on the Fandom Podcast link, so make sure you guys check that out. If you are a huge fan of Alfred Hitchcock, these guys are, and Tom and Brandon are from Canada, and Chris is from England, and I believe you know one of them from Trek FM. Is it Brandon that's from Trek FM?
Yeah, Brandon Shea Mutala. He and I work together on Trek FM, and I call him Ambassador B-Shea because it's... You know, he's such a great...
I love that. That's cool.
He's such a great guy. He's such a great guy. He actually was on one of my last podcasts that I did for Trek FM. We were live podcasting from the Las Vegas convention last year in August at the Rio. And he's a fantastic podcaster. He does a lot for the Trek FM network. He is a huge fan of soundtracks and scores. He's very... he's very well versed in that field of fandom, and this was
very cool.
Surprising to me. I'm glad that he is bringing something unique to the Fandom Podcast Network. You don't hear of specific Alfred Hitchcock podcasts out there, so I think that's something that our listeners will be able to really enjoy.
Well, like I said, Kyle and I interviewed them, asked them about their fandom and other things they were into. So make sure you guys check that out. Even if you're not a Hitchcock fan, check out their show. It's fascinating, and it's good to get to know those guys. They seem like great guys and huge fans of film in general. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to maybe possibly get them to guest spot on some other future shows we're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. Culture Clash 2, our weekly fandom show that I co-host with Kyle. We did our Brew Stew, our official Star Wars segment here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We did a huge wrap-up of the Star Wars Celebration with myself, of course, Mr. Florida Fulcrum himself, Matthew Clifton, and Davis Grayson, and a friend of the Fandom Podcast Network and frequent guest as of late, Michael Morris from Cloud City Casino, where we talk about all of our experience at the Star Wars Celebration. And we also just released a Culture Clash summer movie preview where we preview all of the movies coming out for this summer blockbuster season. So we cover a lot. They're really excited about that. And then Norm, guess what? I just started working on the notes for 1987, the movies.
Oh,
it's right around the corner, man.
So good. Awesome.
Yeah, and we're not going to just talk about the movies. They will be highlighted, but we're going to talk a little bit about the pop culture and what was going on in 1987. So we're going to take a little time travel. Of course, the reason why we're talking 1987 is because it is the 30th anniversary of all of those films that have come out. So,
do you have a favorite movie from 1987?
Oh, man. God. Predator comes to mind, RoboCop, Lethal Weapon, just so many good stuff coming out. It's man.
Tough choices.
yeah. We're going to get into the toys too. You know, the trends. Yeah. Do you remember Pound Puppies?
Oh, of course. Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll dive into that. That's going to be a 4-part special. We're going to have some special guest co-hosting that with us. So make sure you pay attention to that. It's going to be coming out soon. Couch Potato Theater recently did Tron. Big fan of that series. We did the original Tron, of course, and we talked about Tron Legacy, the animated series, and also the toys. And we also did commentary on the two movies. Mm-hmm. And we have an End Zone football special coming up. Kyle and I are going to talk about the NFL draft and the NFL schedule. A lot of stuff has happened, and so we know there's some sports fans out there that are going to be interested in on that take as
well. You excited to get Beast Mode for Silver and Black?
Yes, I'm excited that we got Marshawn Lynch coming back. And Norm, I think the Cleveland Browns, with all the trades and the deals they made over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. I think they had about 50,000 picks. It was great.
At least. At least, yeah. But, you know, here's a funny thing. It's like we got great sports movies when it comes to Cleveland Browns. We have Major League, right, which was that really great Indians movie. And we have Draft Day, which has
that's
to
true.
Do with the draft.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's true. And everyone would love to see Cleveland make it into the playoffs and maybe win a Super Bowl eventually. So,
eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
But they got to go through Oakland or, excuse me, Las Vegas soon.
That's right, the Las Vegas Raiders of Anaheim. So,
well, Norm, any last thoughts as we wrap this up?
Thank you, Jill, for suggesting this to us. It's always nice to be able to go back into the archives and revisit episodes that we haven't seen in a while. Rewatching episodes, that's on the Highlander Rewatches format. That's what they do, and they do that brilliantly. But it is nice for us, Kevin, to be able to kind of step away from all things Highlander and focus on something like a rewatch so that we can revisit and put into new perspectives episodes that like this that we didn't really give that big of a chance to when it first came out. We were, again, this came out in 1994, and I watched it first broadcast, and I know that you were catching up with it, but this was, you know, 2 decades ago for me, seeing this. Not that I haven't seen it in that time, in between that time, but as you grow, your experience changes and you apply those experiences to what you see. And I'm glad that the distance of time and a little forgiveness have brought a different enjoyment of this episode for me.
This episode's messed with my mind, bro. I can't get around this new definition of immortal now. It should be called Highlander, the hard to kills.
You got mind bleepered.
Yes. But you know what? What a fantastic episode for that to happen. Thanks, Jill.
I think you owe Kevin some like wacky flavored Kit Kats now. you know, so I can get it.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Yeah, I just want to say thanks again, Jill. Great pick. You've turned me around on this episode. Gave me a lot to think about. And that's what I like doing in these episodes, Norm. And I love doing this podcast is we dive into this type of thing. And this is what we do best. And this is what I like about it. So thank you, Jill. And thank you, Norm. Well, that's it, guys. I'm Kevin. And on behalf of my co-host, Norman, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation that you feel is the mind bleepery. And that quickening inside your apartment. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.